speaking on this program is Brother Ken Willis.
As Americans, we are a diverse people. One of the things that makes our country strong is the freedom to express diverse opinions. Our country, our leaders, and those who work to carry out the task of government need our prayers. We like to think of our nation as a Christian nation, and we even assert often that our founding fathers were all Christians, but that isn't exactly the way it was. Our founding fathers may have been mostly Christians in the broad sense of the term, but there were some who were not Christians. Thomas Jefferson, for example, did not see us as a nation founded on Christian beliefs. Jefferson was a deist who believed that God created the world somewhat like a clockmaker, that he wound up the universe, and then he walked away to let it run down without any further interference. And Jefferson once took scissors to paste the Bible up as it, in his own making. He cut out what he didn't like and what he did like. He took all of that out and put together what he wanted. And yet he's supposed to have written those immortal lines, "All men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights." But he didn't see that as a uniquely Christian principle. On another occasion, Jefferson wrote about the influence of religion on public morality. And what he wrote was, quote, "The interests of society require observation of those moral precepts only in which all religions agree," end of quote. Well, he may have been rather naive in that, because I'm not sure there's any moral precept on which all religions agree. There was a kind of a mixed message from Jefferson. He thought divine creation was a good reason to break away from the British crown, but he also thought God was really somewhere else in the universe taking care of other business, not really paying a whole lot of attention to the things that were going on in Philadelphia in 1776. So we really cannot make the claim that the United States is a Christian nation or that it is a theocracy. It does not enjoy favored status among the nations like the ancient nation of Israel did. In fact, if you study history, you learn such things that is in the state of Louisiana, they had trouble figuring out what God blessed and what He didn't. The French came in and named the territory after Louis XIV. People thought God was blessing the nation of France. Then in the early 19th century, Napoleon sold it to the United States. And then suddenly God was blessing the USA. But then the state seceded from the Union, became a part of the Confederacy, and Confederate patriots believed that God was blessing the Confederate States of America. Then at the conclusion of the war, the state reentered the Union, and once again, God was the protector of the USA. Well, friends, it hardly seems logical to think that God changed sides so many times. And what I'm suggesting is that the nation to which we belong is not like the ancient nation of Israel. They were the selected people of God. On the other hand, we can say that it is a nation under God. Inscribed on our coins and money is "In God We Trust." And if you look at the nickel, those words are right in front of Thomas Jefferson's nose, which kind of attaches a total different meaning to the phrase "in your face." Actually, God does have a purpose and a use for all civil governments. Even the corrupt governments of ancient Rome served God's purpose. Paul was writing about that very government when in Romans chapter 13, he wrote in verse 4, concerning government, "He is a minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. He is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil." God did not intend that people should live in chaos and anarchy. He did not envision a society of barbarians controlled by those with the strongest weapons or the ones that were the bravest. In His providential design for human race, God saw government as a means of providing peace, providing protection, and justice, as well as being a promoter of the economic well-being of its people. To that end, Christians have a mandate to pray for, to support, and honor the powers that be. In verse 1 of Romans 13, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God." And then in verse 6, he said, "For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing." In other words, everyone needs to submit himself to government authorities. And the reason we pay taxes, the authorities are servants. And then in verse 7, "Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom is due, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor, owe no man anything but to love one another." So he's saying that we are to have respect, obey the laws of the land. Yet sometimes you may think our government officials don't deserve respect. They do things that we disagree with. Well, I will remind those of us who feel that way that the Apostle Paul was talking about the Roman government that was so very corrupt that often had immoral, depraved people controlling the reins of government. But as long as the government is doing good, providing for public safety, punishing evildoers, we have a reason and an obligation to honor and respect those who are serving in government. But how do we demonstrate our respect for government? In an open society such as ours, we have the option of participating in government. We have a right and a responsibility in letting our vote be counted and be involved in electing our government officials. And if you don't like what they're doing, you can run against the guy who's got the job. You can try to kick the rascal out, and nobody will put you in jail for calling him a rascal. We can become involved in various volunteer and community betterment projects. But I want to suggest this afternoon that there's something the Christian does which is very unique, and that is to pray for his public officials. Well, specifically, what should the content of those prayers be? Now, to answer that, I want to direct our attention to an Old Testament passage that I believe gives some insight in how we should pray for government, and that is the 72nd Psalm. The 72nd Psalm is a prayer for the nation of Israel. More specifically, it's a prayer for the King of Israel. Now, it's not exactly parallel to our situation because the nation of Israel was a theocracy. They were God's chosen nation. And the prayer in Psalm 72 is for a king, and we have no king. But in praying for the king, the psalmist demonstrates certain principles that we need to recognize when we are praying for those in positions of power, in government, and leadership in our society. And I would suggest that it provides us with some general guidelines to observe when we're praying about government in our day. First, the psalmist prayed for justice and righteousness. Listen to verse 1 and 2 of the 72nd Psalm. "Give the king thy judgments, O God, and thy righteousness unto the king's son. He shall judge thy people with righteousness, and thy poor with judgment." Now, one version says, "Endow the king with your justice, O God. He will judge your people in righteousness, and your afflicted ones with justice." So here's a prayer for the government authority to learn from the model of God, because God is the very epitome of justice and righteousness. The theme of social justice was emphasized time and again in the writings of the Old Testament prophets. One of the most outspoken advocates of social justice was the prophet Amos, that tiller of sycamore trees. Amos lived in a time when the poor were very oppressed, the needy were crushed, justice was denied to the oppressed. Even though folks were going through the motions conducting worship services, Amos said that God says, "I cannot stand your assemblies." So the prophet pleaded with the people and with the leaders of the people to change their attitude. He said in Amos 5, verse 15, "Hate evil, love good, maintain justice in the courts." And perhaps the Lord God Almighty would have mercy on that remnant. Well, we live in a world today in which there is increasing suspicion of government. The solution to legitimate grievances is not the elimination of law. It's not the abandonment of government. We cannot survive in an atmosphere of anarchy. The most positive thing that any one of us can do is to pray for those who hold the reins of government, that they would practice justice and righteousness, that they would be persons of such integrity and character that doing what is right would take precedence over doing what is expedient to get them reelected. We need to pray for our government leaders as the psalmist prayed for the king, that he will defend the afflicted among the people, save the children of the needy, he will crush the oppressor, he will take a stock of the unborn for their protection and not legislate that they can be murdered in legalized abortion. So that, as verse 5 says, that he might be in office for quite a while. He will endure as long as the sun, as long as the moon, throughout all generations. Well, we don't expect our government leaders to endure as long as the sun, although it looks like some may try to be in government all of their lives. But the president serves 4 years, and a second 4 years if he can get reelected. So nobody's going to last as long as the sun and the moon. But in verse 5, in ancient Near Eastern royal court language, roughly means, "Long live the king." Well, we have the obligation, we have the privilege of praying for our government officials so that we might be one nation under God. And that Latin phrase on our coin, "E pluribus unum," which means out of one, out of many. We may disagree, we may vigorously disagree, but we're still one people. And I ask you to join in praying for our government, that you become a Christian so that you can, as a child of God, have access to the throne of grace. For today, my time is gone. I bid you a very pleasant good afternoon.